Hello, everyone. My name is Desiree, and I am an addict and alcoholic. So this month is my birthday month. I finally got my 1 year clean and sober fully, and it's been a roller coaster, you know, and I can finally say I'm feeling better now, but, you know, even leaving treatment, I was still crazy, still pissed. Still didn't understand what the fuck was going on and why I had to do all this stuff, you know. I don't know if you guys know, but I'm from El Paso. So me going out to Austin for treatment was a very different experience for me. You know, I have lived in other states. I've lived in New Jersey and I've been exposed to different areas. But this in particular, you know, just being with my history, like, okay, let me start from the beginning. So I grew up, I'm the fourth kid out of six. I come from a Hispanic family, so there was always lots of, I don't want to say violence, but a lot of drama always happening in my house. You know, like my dad, he was a gangbanger when he was younger. So I grew up in the hood. Not, I didn't live in the hood, but we always went back to my dad's hood and hung out with homies and stuff like that. So to me, even though I lived in the better area, we left the better area to go hang out all the time, you know, in the projects or, you know, in the rough areas. So that's what I was used to. I was used to hanging out with gangsters, with criminals, with, you know, just people that, you know, were from the streets pretty much. And I learned really quickly, like early on, like, okay, you need to stay away from these people. And if you see this, somebody coming this way, you got to walk this way. You know, I was always on high alert because the areas we were in were not safe for kids, but it was just natural. It was normal for me to be in those type of areas, you know. So I can remember growing up, you know, I have an older sister that were both in the month of August. So all of our birthday parties were together. And every morning, the next day after our birthdays, you know, all my dad's friends would be drunk in the living room asleep, you know, because they would buy a kegger every birthday party. It was a kid's birthday party, but we had to have a keg because then nobody would come. That's what my dad would say. So, you know, just those kind of memories. And I just thought that was normal. I didn't know not everyone had kegger birthday parties at 5 years old. You know, I didn't know that people would actually come if you didn't have beer. You know, I didn't know those things. And my dad, he was a user too. And I ended up using the same substance he used. He was a cocaine user. And, you know, from all my childhood, I didn't understand like why my dad would leave. He would leave and he'd be gone, you know, for days. And I would blame my mom. I would tell her, it's your fault, mom. Like, it's your fault that my dad doesn't come home, because if you would stop getting mad at him, he would come home. And I can remember the day my mom finally, like, was disgusted with my mouth, like, completely fed up, because I obviously had no idea what was going on, you know. And she turned around and told me, she's like, no, Desiree, you want to know why your dad doesn't come home? It's because he does drugs. And I swear, like, my world just shriveled up in a little ball. Like, I had no idea. And apparently, you know, I was kid number four. I was the baby at that time. My younger siblings were not in the picture yet. So it was like everybody in the house knew what was going on except for me, you know. And I seem to have taken it the hardest, I guess, out of that. I'm the only one out of the four kids that ended up, you know, using cocaine especially. And, yeah, me and my dad are very similar. So I think that's why, like, anything I saw my dad do, I wanted to be like him. You know, I saw how he talked to everybody in the, you know, all the friends like there at Missouri Park where we used to hang around in the hood. So I wanted to be like that. I wanted to make sure that I talked to everyone, and I watched my dad. Okay, he talked to them like this. He acted cool like this, you know, everything. I would just scoop it all up and take it in, you know. And when I was a teenager, I think that was when my dad was probably at his worst. You know, I remember my sister tried to kill herself all in one, like a matter of 6 months. My parents got caught with cocaine. My mom's not a user. She's never been a user. But since my dad would sell, he had it all the time. They ended up getting pulled over and taken. So, you know, my parents get caught. My sister's trying to kill herself. My dad's leaving all the time. The CPS gets involved. They're trying to take me, my younger sister, and my mom was pregnant at the time. They're trying to take us away. So I just remember, like, I just wanted to get out of that house. Like, I just, there was so much chaos constantly going on in that house that I just wanted a break, you know. And I was only like 11 or 12 years old. So, you know, during that time, I could remember, like, I was always trying to run away. I was trying to go to my sister, my oldest sister's house, which was already, she was already married and living on her own. And my mom wouldn't let me, you know. She would tell me, like, I had to stay here. And then I remember my older, I have two older sisters, so the one that's older than me and my mom, them two, they beat me up, like, outside my house because I was trying to leave to go to my other sister's house. And they, like, jumped me, like, pulled me inside. And somebody saw this happening and called the cops. So when the cops got there, you know, they were asking my mom, you know, why does she want to run away? What's going on in the house? And my mom obviously wasn't going to tell them, oh, it's because her dad is a drug addict and sells drugs. So, you know, she lied and it pissed me off. And there was one part that I wanted to read from the 12 and 12. It says right here, psychiatrists have often observed defiance is the outstanding characteristic of many alcoholics. That, like, when I read step two in that book, I was like, fuck, man, no wonder I came out like this, because nobody could tell me shit. Even as a 5-year-old, even as an 8-year-old, nobody. I wasn't afraid of any sort of grounding. I didn't give two fucks, like, about anything. No one was going to tell me anything about anything. So, you know, I remember all my aunts, they hated me because I was mean to all my cousins, my uncles, everybody. Like, I was that kid that was, nobody wanted to invite to her house because I was rude. I was rude. I had no respect. I had a big fucking mouth, and I made sure anybody knew it because I didn't care. So that defiance in me, you know, and I'm standing there in the room and the cop is asking my mom, you know, well, why doesn't she want to be here? What's going on? I told my mom, why don't you tell this cop, you know, what's really going on in here? And I'm laughing at her because I knew, you know, she was obviously not going to tell him. But, you know, that was just the perspective I had. And then another thing, like, I, now that I'm older and I'm looking back at, you know, my life and I'm trying to understand it better, is, you know, all I watched as a kid being in, like, a gangster house like that, my parents were both raised, like, in the streets and the projects. So the only movies and stuff I saw were like Scarface, Casino, you know, Carlito's Way, you know, Blood In, Blood Out. Like, these, this is all I knew. So I would see it on TV, then I'm seeing at home. So I didn't know. I had no clue that people lived differently. I had no idea it was not normal to have like a drug dealer dad. I had no idea that it was not normal to have a brother that was a professional thief. You know, so I was just waiting for the age for me to get old enough so I could start doing all this stuff too, you know, because I wanted to fit in. You know, I was just as tough as any dude. And, you know, I don't know if you guys see me, but like, I'm pretty skinny. So it was always really awkward to see me there because everybody would be like, what is this skinny girl doing here? And here I was, you know, stealing cars, stealing motorcycles at age of 15 or 16 years old, you know. And I bring this up because I still hadn't used drugs. I think I would smoke weed and stuff at 14, 15. I drank like a little bit at 16, but the drugs were not the first choice. It was the adrenaline I think I seeked through stealing these cars. Because, and now that I look back and I talk to people, I'm like, yeah, I did this or that, you know, and I'm sharing my story. They're shocked, you know, because looking at me now and hearing what I've done then, they don't really believe me. You know, and it's funny because I know I don't look like it, but I did do a lot of terrible stuff. And it's kind of good that I didn't look the part, because that's why I got away with half the stuff I did then, because no one suspected me. No one suspected that I was a chola or a gangbanger or, you know, any of that, because I always dressed like just a normal girl. So I remember I started dating my daughter's dad, which was my high school sweetheart, at 15, and he was already a cokehead. So, and it's so strange, like, how they say that you choose what you have at home. So if you see my daughter's dad and my dad, they're identical, these two morons. They're the same people in itself. And as a kid, you know, I saw my mom always chasing my dad around, always trying to fix him, always trying to help him. We'd be all four kids in the van driving around looking for my dad all night. So here I am, 15, with a cokehead boyfriend, and he'd leave and do the same thing. So I was like, well, I think I already know what to do here. You know, I got to do what my mom did. I got to chase this guy around and fix him because he needs help. And the only person that can help him is me. That was the thought I thought, you know, back then. And so I did that for a few years. And then, you know, we were all stealing together with my older brother. And at 17, I went to jail. I went in, you know, you guys are in Texas too, but state of Texas, 17 is an adult. So I went with the big girls. I was like 90 pounds. I couldn't even carry my mattress upstairs, but here I went off. You know, in a matter of 6 months, I picked up 3 charges. I had 2 felonies, a misdemeanor. And then when I picked up that last misdemeanor, they revoked the PR bond I had. So then I got sent back. Literally, it was like October, December, March, like all back to back. And at 17 years old, I was dropped out of high school. That's when I started partying all the time. My mom made me break up with that boyfriend because she said, you know, that it had gone too far. So that's when my using started a little bit more. I can remember the first time I tried coke. I took it from my dad's, you know, stash. And I thought, like, I wanted to understand. I never even really used, you know, the cocaine because I was at a party and it was fun. I wanted to understand what the big deal was. Like, why did these guys always leave me for this substance? You know, so I don't know if you know, but like in Scarface, all these movies, right? They make it seem like these guys are doing pounds of cocaine. Like they just submerge their face in it, right? So when I did it, I was by myself. I didn't know anything. So I did like a really large amount the first time because I really had no idea. And I got super sick and I thought, you know what, I'm never going to do this again. I was super scared. I still at that point didn't understand like why they would choose that over me. To me, it was a scary experience. But for them, you know, they enjoyed it. So, you know, then I'm 17 years old. I'm dropped out of high school. I've already gone to like 4 different high schools because I keep getting in trouble. I keep getting sent, you know, to alternative for gangs and all this stuff. And so I just started partying. I was going to Juarez every day, which is Mexico. We're like a border town. So we just cross a bridge and we're in Mexico. And over there, it's drink and drown every day. So that's what I would do. And I can remember my mom, she would cry a lot. I would wake up like at 3 p.m. I would go make myself a ramen, get a bowl of chips. And I would start getting ready to go out. And she would cry and she would just cry and she would tell me like, Desi, what are you doing? You know, you're not like this. You weren't going to be like this. Like, you don't have to be like this. Life doesn't have to be like this. And I was like, Ma, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, like, I'm fine. This is normal teenage stuff. Like, this is not bad, but I'm dropped out of high school, literally with 2 felonies and a misdemeanor with, you know, no future expected for me. I really thought I was screwed. I didn't think I had any sort of life after this. You know, it was pretty, you know, I don't want to say devastating, but I just thought like, well, I'm stuck like this, so might as well just, you know, enjoy it while it lasts. So yeah, I would party every single day, drinking every day. And I would use cocaine every once in a while. It wasn't that big of a deal, but the drinking, I remember I would drink a lot every single day. And somehow or another, like, the following year was supposed to be my senior year in high school. When I went back to school, I came out in the newspaper and stuff. So there was no denying that I had these felony charges. And since I was so well known in this school for being such a troublemaker, those principals, the second they saw me walk in the door, they ran. They're like, you're not staying in this high school. You know, they sent me to, it's called Raymond Thayer's, which is just like an alternative school. And it's just filled with all bad kids. And that's when I had like my first little spiritual awakening, I guess you can say, because I'm sitting in this bus. You can't wear hair ties because people obviously will choke you out with a hair tie. You can't wear laces in your shoes. You know, you can't wear a belt. It was just so much stuff. And I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here? You know, and it's like 6 o'clock in the morning. You can't get dropped off. You had to get picked up by a bus. So I get picked up by this bus. It's so early in the morning. I'm barely waking up. And these guys would be fighting in the bus for no reason. No reason. They just start throwing down. And my first thought was like, man, these guys are all future inmates. Like this. And that's when I saw the difference. Like, you know what? I am bad. I do bad things. but I'm not like that. Like, I'm like, man, I should not be here. And I remember before I left, the principal told me, she said, you know what, Desiree, I'm going to send you because you've been getting away with this a little too long. This is already my senior year in high school, but I was on the 6-year plan. So I stayed 6 years in high school, but, it was supposed to be my senior year. And she told me, I'm going to go ahead and send you. And she's like, but mark my words, you are not Raymond Thea's material. She told me that. I was like, lady, you don't know me. I have 2 felonies. You know, I'm a criminal. I'm just like these people. But I really wasn't, you know, I don't think I knew any better. You know, I thought it was normal to do all these things. You know, when I went to jail the first time, I remember, and I called home, my mom's crying, obviously, because I'm in jail with my brother and my boyfriend. And it just was such a bad situation. And my mom's crying, like, why would you do this to me, Desi? You know, what have I done to you guys, you know, for you to treat me this way? And I just told her, I was like, are you going to get me out or not? Because I need to call somebody else. I had no remorse, no shame, no nothing, like, at that time. I was so stupid, such a young, stupid teenager. And, I kind of, when I went to that school, it made me realize, like, fuck, man, and what am I doing here? You know, I was looking around, and these were, like, I hung around with gang people, but these were second-notch gangsters. Like, these are all literally future killers and stuff. And while I was there, my boyfriend that I had just broken up with, he ended up getting jumped by some of the guys there, and he stabbed them. So then I was extra not liked because, oh, that girl's boyfriend was the one that stabbed all these guys and put them in the hospital. So it was just really chaotic my entire life. I don't think I don't think I knew of any time of there being peace around me or anything like that. You know, so I get out of there. I try to start shaping up. And honestly, all through high school, I kept moving schools because I did want to try again. Like, I'll tell my mom, like, you know what, if I just move to this school, like, everything's going to be better. Like, nobody knows me over there. They don't know my boyfriend. And sure enough, something would happen and he would fight over there or just something. It was always so much, you know, gangs and drama and fighting and rumbles and people getting jumped all the time, you know, and it just was really crazy. So I go and I move with my older sister. I try to go to a different high school again. This is high school number 6. Two of the other high schools, I almost got framed. This cop was trying to frame me that I stole the purse on a day I wasn't even at school. So I have a resentment towards the police department still that I have not been able to get through. I don't trust cops at all, you know, and yeah, I had a big mouth, but I still didn't do anything wrong for them to have done that to me that day. But I just, you know, when I was in treatment the first time, and I remember hearing one of the girls' life stories, I was like, fuck, man, like, my life is not as fucked up as this bitch. Like, I thought, like, man, I'm not going to have anything to say because I didn't see all the drug use in my life until I started writing. And until I started writing that life story, that's when I realized all the gang violence. Like, I had no idea how full of violence my life had been. No idea till 2 years ago that I finally connected all the dots. Like, holy shit, I'm around a lot of violent people. You know, so if you haven't done that life story, you ladies in there, you might want to think about it because it really helped me to see the bigger picture on what, you know, I had gone through and the patterns that I had fallen in. So, you know, I went back to high school. I did finally graduate, and I was kind of doing decent. Like, I got a job. I was working at Whataburger. I had a better boyfriend. But anytime I had any sort of sobriety or any time that I just wasn't that crazy drinking-wise or doing drugs, it's because I had a boyfriend. So I just want to bring that up because I didn't notice that either. Like, yeah, maybe I had this guy to focus my time on, so then I wouldn't focus in on partying. But, you know, it was always one or the other, partying or boyfriend. So, you know, I calm down. I'm going through, like, the motions, trying to make up for all the time lost. You know, I had to stay 6 years in high school, you know, but it was a really big moment because I didn't give up, you know. And that's one thing I think that I have within me is, despite the circumstances, besides the odds against me, I never give up for whatever reason. It's nothing really in me. I think it's just my higher power kind of telling me constantly, like, nope, just keep going. Like, there's no other option. Just keep going. You know, what's the other option? Just give up. Like, just stop and, you know, whatever. So I did it. I kept going. A few years later, I bump into my very first boyfriend. I'm going through my breakup with my second boyfriend. I end up getting pregnant from the first criminal boyfriend that stabbed those guys. So that's why my daughter, you know, is from him. I stayed with him like 3 years, but he, you know, he was using, he was drinking. He wouldn't come home, not even on Thanksgiving, not Christmas, not her birthday. And I had been clean. I stayed clean my whole pregnancy. I breastfed her almost 3 years. So I stayed clean. I didn't drink. I didn't do nothing. And I didn't have a boyfriend. Like, I really wouldn't pay attention to him. I remember people would call me and they would tell me, like, Desiree, we just saw him at this bar, you know, with this girl. And I would just be like, oh, forget about that guy. Like, I didn't care. I did and I didn't. But to me, my focus now was my daughter. Like, I can see it now. There was always something else that I was focusing on rather than paying attention to me and how I was feeling and why I'm, you know, doing the things that I'm doing. So I stayed clean 3 years. When my daughter was 2 and a half, I started partying again. And it just went so quick. Like, when they say it picks up right where you left off, that's no joke. Like, I just picked up right then and there, partying every weekend, drinking on my lunch hour. And about when my daughter was 1 and a half, I was able to get those felony charges dismissed. I fought them 6 years. 6 years. And they did not want to budge. They wanted me to go down because my boyfriend snitched me out. He said I sent him, you know, and this is the father of my child at this point, and he still never went to help me with my courts. When I got back with him, that was the deal. He said, you know, I'm sorry. He had gotten out of prison. He told me, I want to help you with your charges. You know, I messed up. I should have never snitched you out. And so I get back with him, get pregnant. He's still not even because I'm the mother of his child. He still never helped me. So when she was about 1 and a half, I got a new attorney because I was getting better jobs. You know, I was still drinking and using every once in a while before the pregnancy. Then after the pregnancy, I wasn't. And I would get I would just get better jobs. I got like a first office job and this and that. And I kind of was moving up. But then when I started drinking and using again, the chaos in my house has never stopped. Whether my dad uses or not, you know, he just becomes a dry drunk and he becomes angrier, you know, and he's very controlling. He's very OCD. And all of us have that like neurotic behavior, all my siblings, especially all my sisters. So I fist fought my sister one time. And that's when I thought, you know what? I left her dad because I didn't want her to see what I saw, you know, and I didn't want her to think it was normal that dad didn't come home. You know, I didn't want her to know that he was a cocaine user because I knew when I found out it was the most devastating thing ever. So I thought I had made that change. You know, I thought I was doing good. I made the change. You know, I left the drug addict boyfriend, you know, and I was being a super, you know, single mom. I was going to college. You know, I did get my high school diploma. I'm going to college. I'm working 40 hours a week. You know, I thought I was doing good, but then the drinking started again. And then the fighting at my house with my parents happened with my little sister. So then I had to leave. So that stress of having to be like the sole provider for my daughter was more than I could bear looking back now. I don't know how I made it so long like that. You know, I had a brand new car. I had a good apartment in a good area. And I paid everything by myself. So it was a lot of stress. And I just remember I never had money extra because I had, you know, bills and this to pay. So my friends would be like, ah, don't worry. Come on. We're going to go buy this much, you know, like we'll give you some, like no problem. You know, so I would go and I would drink and I would use with them on the weekend, you know, recuperate on Sunday and then go back to work and school, you know, during the week. And I did this for like the next 2 years. And I just remember feeling very crazy. I remember just feeling very alone too. Like when I hear people share that in meetings, how alone they feel, like I know what that feels like, especially as a single mom and not having anyone to share like pictures with about all this cute stuff my daughter did. Facebook was not cool yet. You know, I just remember just feeling very alone and very, like I couldn't ask for help from anyone. I had to do everything by myself. So the using was just like, it was just really, it helped me get through those moments. And then I met my ex-husband. I got married to him. And that was a product of my addiction. I know for a fact now, because I just wanted out of my life. I was tired of being the only responsible adult to provide for this kid. And I saw this guy kind of like my knight in shining armor. Like, he was supposed to be a cop. He was nothing like me. He was nothing like me, nothing like my exes. So I thought, like, this was my chance, you know, like, I'll just stay with this guy. You know, I'll marry him like 18, 19 years. I'll raise these kids and then I'll live my life. Like, that was my thought. And it was really just because I wanted to get out of the hell I had put myself in from using and drinking, you know, and living a life I couldn't afford. I couldn't afford to live on my own. You know, I was barely making ends meet, you know, and it was very, very, very stressful. But being raised like under my dad's roof, my dad was the only one working all the time. He provided no matter what. And even though he had a drug problem, it never affected us financially. He always provided. So me having that belief system instilled in me, I thought there was no other way. I had to provide for this little girl no matter what it took. So I married this guy, you know, he takes me to New Jersey. And I remember like the months leading up to me having to leave, I was going hard, like taking everything and anything, because I knew once I got to those states up there, you know, drugs were more expensive. So I was like trying to get everything in before I left. You know, and he had no clue. Like, I married this guy. We got married in the beach in Cancun. And when we were, like, packing, getting everything ready, I was behind the sofa, like, snorting, you know, all this stuff. And it never dawned on me, like, hey, maybe this is getting a little out of hand. Like, why, if I'm having to hide behind the sofa while this guy is packing my bags over there, like, maybe this is bad. You know, I didn't know it. I didn't connect the dots. And when I left with him to New Jersey, he ended up being a compulsive liar. He was married when he married me and he had a girlfriend, but I didn't find out till almost like a year later. It was about 6 or 7 months after I moved to New Jersey. I get like the papers in the mail from the IRS showing, you know, his name and another woman's name. And I asked him like, oh, were you married before? You know, I was honestly, you know, I had a child with somebody else. So to me, I was trying to be like, you know, kind, like, you know what? It's okay. You know, you can just tell me the truth. You were married before, you can tell me. And he was like, no. He denied it. He denied it with the paper in my hand. He would not tell the truth. He just denied. A week later, I find out he's drowning in debt. He's not paying our car. He's not paying our insurance. He was just like lying about everything. He lied about a wife, then lied about the money, our finances. And I'm in New Jersey. Like, New Jersey is pretty far away from Texas, especially El Paso. And I'm petrified. Like, when I started finding all this stuff out, because maybe I was in a hard situation, like, but I was always paying my bills. Like, that was just something I was raised to instill, like, you pay your bills no matter what. And here this guy was not paying our car. I'm like, how do you think this is going to work out? Then the following week, I get a message from a girl on Facebook, I can remember, and she was asking me, like, how long have you been with this guy? And I'm like, look, I thought she was going to tell me about the wife. I'm like, look, girl, whatever you have to tell me, I don't want to know, please. Like, I don't want to know. I know, you know, he has a past. And she told me, you need to know, you know, he was with my friend and she said another name. So it wasn't even the wife's name. So not only did he have a wife, he had a girlfriend. I was the third girl on the boat. And here I was with this man in another state, completely alone with my daughter. And then a week after that, I found out I was pregnant of my son. So by that time, my mom was like, no, you're done. Like, your dad's going to go pick you up. You're coming back. It's over. And I told him, you know what? You know, I'm going to have this baby, because my daughter was already going to turn 5. And I loved being a mom. That's one thing I do, you know, want to mention. Despite all the chaos and all the things I was doing, I was always a really good mom. I always bathed her every night. I remember I would sit down and take a bath with her. Well, not in the bath, but I always made sure to give her my time. You know, she was always well-dressed, always well-groomed, sweetest little girl ever. You know, nothing like me. I was a shitty-ass kid, a shitty-ass person, but not my daughter. My daughter is a sweetheart. And, yeah, so I had my son, and that's when I realized, like, man, this drug use was getting out of hand. I didn't use during my pregnancy. And it wasn't until that I went to treatment and I heard the girls telling me, like, that they use pregnant. I was like, what the fuck? It never dawned on me that it was possible. I was pissed the whole time, pregnant. My God, I want this fucking kid to come out because I want to go do my shit. It never dawned on me, like, ah, oh, fuck it. I'm just going to, you know, do a little bit right here. Like, it never dawned on me I could do that. You know, so I had my son. He came out premature because of all the fighting with his dad. So he came out like 2 months early. And yeah, as soon as I got out of the hospital, I went into Connect. And I did it just behind my husband's back because he's a square. Like, he doesn't know anything about anything. Like, he had no idea. He knew I was like acting weird, but he didn't connect the dots. So that's what I would do. I would just use, like, every Friday, I'd go pick up, I'd come home, I'd clean the house and, you know, let my kids do their thing. And it was okay for a little while till it wasn't, you know, and then my ex, I made him leave because he was crazy with my daughter. And it just got really hard. I had a newborn 6-month-old baby and a 5-year-old, and I was going to school and working and I couldn't manage. I was just using just to get through the day. I couldn't even, you know, go through the work day without using. And, you know, once it started getting really bad, my family's getting involved, I start trying to find help. You know, I'm reading books, I'm going to lectures out of town to try to find the solution. I knew I had this problem with coke, but I didn't know like how bad this problem was. Like, it's just a problem I gotta, you know, deal with and then I'll move on. Like, I didn't see like the depth of, you know, addiction itself. So, you know, I'm reading books, I'm doing yoga. One of the books I read recommended, you know, AA and was talking about how well AA worked for the world, how they spoke from the language of love, because there's nowhere else that you can go and share and tell someone, you know what, I crashed yesterday and I killed 3 people, and nobody in that room is going to judge you. So I went to AA thinking like, oh, I'm just going to see how they got better and that's it. Like, I didn't even think I had a drinking problem. I couldn't recognize that the drinking I'd done, you know, in the past was a problem as well. You know, there was a point that I couldn't even drink anymore because my stomach would hurt so bad, you know, that I would just puke. So that's when my using started getting out of control. So reading these books, I started going to AA, and I've been going for about since 2017, and we're already in 2021, you know, it's about 4 years and I only have 1 year clean. You know, so I would go and I would just kind of listen and I would tell them, you know, I believe that things could get better for you guys, but I didn't believe it for me. And I can remember my favorite old timer in my favorite meeting down here. He would laugh at me when I would say that. I'm like, it's because, you know, I believe, you know, you guys can get better, but I don't believe I can get better. You know, I couldn't believe that anything could change me. I didn't really know, you know, how or what was going to change me, but I just knew I wanted to change. And that was like that same feeling that I felt when I was sitting in that school, you know, that alternative school, looking around like, fuck, man, I don't want to be like this. You know, like I wanted to get better. So it's taken me shifts. You know, I had to lose that street mentality, the gangster mentality, and learn that there's, you know, other ways to live. And I've had people like along the way that weren't even in the program that would take me to like book studies, and I remember he would tell me like, look, Desiree, like there's people that don't do drugs and they don't commit crimes. I'm like, what? You know, what are they talking about? Why wouldn't they? it didn't make no sense to me, you know. So I started going to the meetings, and about a year in, I had like an incident where I had to call my mom because I was afraid, you know, that I had my son had gotten like in harm's way and I had been using all night. So then that was the first time I went to an outpatient program. But you see, what kept me in denial so long was the fact that I wouldn't use every day. So because I didn't use every day, I was not bad like those people, because it's not that bad. Like, if I can stop some days, then it's not that bad. But, you know, I like that in the meetings, they tell you like, don't look at when you stop. Don't look at when you stop, look at your using. Like, if you keep using, even after like some times that you stop, like that's not really stopping, you know, you're just pausing it, not stopping. And you can't, you know, I couldn't stay stopped, you know, and I would go to meetings even every day. I would go to meetings almost every day. I still couldn't stop. I did that outpatient program. I couldn't stay clean in the outpatient program. You know, it was just every single day, like I'd mess up. And it took me another year. I remember going to like an NA meeting and I was crying. My family was waiting for me to get home. They were going to do like an intervention on me. And I'm crying in the meeting. And one of this girl that I really cared about, she came and she told me, don't worry, I'll go with you. You know, I'll go with you. So I thought she was going to back me up. Like, okay, this girl's going to go help me out, tell my family, chill out. She's not that bad. She's all right. No, this girl was like, yeah, you need to put her in treatment right now. Or if you don't, you need to take her kids away. I'm like, bitch, like, why did you come if you're just going to do this to me? Like, what the hell? I was so pissed off, you know, but I didn't see it then. And I wasn't ready. I was not, there was no way in hell that I was fucking going to go to treatment. And so it stayed like that for another year until I had another incident that I had to call my mom the next morning because I couldn't take care of my kids. You know, so that's when I finally was like, you know what, I needed to get help. And that was the first time I went to Austin Recovery. But I was still very shameful. I had a lot of shame. I didn't want nobody to know where I was. I was hiding it from my kids' dad. And, you know, I went into the program, the 90-day program. So I had to take my son. My daughter was too old to go. So, and oh, I forgot to mention, like, when I had my son, I had postpartum depression. So, like, about the first 2 years of his life, like, I did take care of him, and I knew I loved him, and I was his mom, and we were close. I have, like, a lot of pictures, but I had a disconnection with him. I didn't bond with my son. He didn't let me breastfeed him, so I was like, fuck this kid. Like, he doesn't need me. Like, my mom would watch him a lot. So when I go to AR, and they're like, yeah, you have to bring your son, I'm like, this kid, like, can I take the other one? Because this one, like, we have a good bond. But this kid, like, he likes Granny. He doesn't like me, you know, and I had to take him. And that forced me to bond with him, to learn more about him, you know, and it did help. But that time I only stayed like 30 days or even less because my daughter's dad started threatening me that I was going to take her away. So I ended up signing myself out. But I still learned a lot during the time that I was there. I remember, you know, when I had to wait to talk to my counselor. By the time she got to me, I was like, I talked for 45 minutes. I was just telling her what the plan was. I was letting her know what I needed to do. I was in here. So when I got out, I didn't have to stay the 90 days. I was only going to stay 60 days because fuck that. I didn't use every day. So I don't need no 90 days. You know, and I'm going on and on and on and on and on and on. And she just sat there listening to me 45 minutes straight. I'm like, okay, okay. And at the end, she's like, you know what, Desiree? I think we need to work on your humility. She gave me a fucking packet this big, y'all, like this big, just on humility. And I was pissed. Like, who does this bitch think she's talking to? Like, does she not know I'm nice? Like, what the fuck? Like, I'm not mean to her. Like, but I had no connection between, you know, what being kind and what was humble, you know? So now obviously working the steps and all of that, I've been able to learn that. But it's been very challenging. I think because of the fact that I was so hard-headed and so resistant to the program, I had to take a beating. Like, this year was a beating. I went to treatment, and my son's dad filed to take custody away from me with him. But luckily, since I was already in treatment, the CPS didn't do anything. And the court system didn't take him away from me because I, on my own, had already gone to treatment. And that's what I tell a lot of people, like, when they're like, no, I don't need treatment. That maybe you did, but not me. And I laugh. I'm like, you know what, bro? I wish you had the balls to go to treatment. Because unlike me, that was a choice. Every day, it was like me locking myself in a fucking cage and not letting myself out. Because in AR, you can walk out. There was no stop. And I didn't have a CPS case. I didn't have any charges. I didn't have nothing, just the sole desire, you know, to stop. So I, when people try to act like, I'm too good for treatment, I'm like, look, bro, like, no, you're not going to sit here and try to tell me nothing. It's just the denial, you know, it's the denial. And I think that's what kept me that way so long, that I thought it was too good for it. You know, I thought I didn't need it. But luckily, by the time I hit AR the second time, I knew, like, you know what, there's no other choice. Like, I need to do these 12 steps. I need to do whatever they say because I obviously don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. You know, I'm not getting this shit right. You know, I keep trying and it's just getting worse, you know, so I'm just going to try to sit and pay attention. And that's what I've done. You know, I listened to my sponsor this past weekend. I went to a convention and it's helped me so much. You know, I hadn't made amends only to like one person prior to this convention. But that speaker was just so amazing and his story moved me so much. I did like 3 amends this week You know, and it's so freeing. It's so freeing. And I had no idea. And I'm very prideful. That's why it's taken me so long, you know, to admit, you know what? I was wrong. And you know what? Even though you hurt me, I was still wrong. And I still shouldn't have done those things. You know what I mean? So just everything as a whole, you know, and if you would have told me when I left treatment and I had that custody battle going on, you know, how do you think this is going to be in 1 year? How do you think this is going to end? I didn't know what I would think it was. I thought there was no positive outcome. The day I picked up my 1 year clean, I got a letter in the mail saying the judge dismissed the case on its own. I had to do nothing. I didn't have to go to the second court. I didn't have to prove nothing. I didn't have to do anything. I just stayed clean. And I got on my 1 year birthday, I got that fucking letter in the mail saying that the judge dismissed it. That blessing, like that miracle, gave me the faith that I hadn't been able to have these past 4 years. I didn't have no faith, you know, and that Desiree that was telling those people in the meeting, you know, and I believe that it can happen for you guys, but I couldn't believe it for myself. That went away that day that I received that paper. I'm like, you know what? They're right. If you keep coming back, things will get better. You know, the noise in my head is not that loud no more. You know, I get to share with you guys. I'm going to get to go to a treatment center and share my story. And it's just, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that I'm clean. I'm so grateful that I met Chris and everybody at AR. You know, I'm just really grateful for the whole experience. But thank you for letting me share. I don't know if we still got some time or we're good. Okay. But yeah, so this I would recommend for the ladies. You know, for me, I sat there in treatment. I read every single day. I read 6 books aside from the AA book, you know, in there. I also read the NA book. So for y'all that are confused, like, oh, I don't know if I should stick to AA or NA. Like, look, they're both going to work. You know, they're both going to do the same thing. Just try to follow these steps, you know, try to get a sponsor, try to talk to women that are going to stay, you know, solid in this program, because every girl that I was in treatment with the second time, the first time, a lot of them are still clean, but the second time they're all using and they're all back in treatment, or, you know, I'm the only one still clean today. And it's sad. It's really sad because, you know, the 2 girls that I was closest with, one of them is still locked up in her house and doesn't want to answer my messages, doesn't want to go to treatment, doesn't want to do nothing. And there's nothing I can do. You know, so sticking together, you know, that bond, I know I was very resistant to that too. Like, I didn't want to clean. I didn't want to talk to these girls. I was really defensive because I'm from another city and because I'm Mexican and this and that. No one cares. I don't know if you know, but nobody cares. Nobody cares what your background is. Nobody cares anything. They just want to know, like, how you're going to benefit them now. So I want to benefit people by sharing, like, what I've learned, by sharing that it doesn't have to be this way. You don't have to struggle as much as I struggled. I struggled for 4 years trying to stay clean I couldn't even get 30 days for 4 years, you know, and it's painful and it's devastating. Your self-esteem just gets crushed when you just keep trying and you keep failing. But if you were just like, if you would go to treatment, you're in a safe place. And you'll start learning what safe feels like, because I didn't know what safe felt like. I didn't know what a safe home felt like. But I learned that in treatment. Like, you know what? A safe home means that there's not drugs and chaos around. You know what I mean? Like, all those little things. Like, I just had no idea. You know, no idea. But I think that's pretty much all I got. I just want to thank you, Chris, for asking me. I was really excited all day. I was just thinking, like, what am I going to say? You know, I love the program. I love the 12 steps. It's helped me let go of me, because that's what I think I couldn't let go of, what the image I wanted people to see of me. And the discomfort that everybody feels, like, when you're, like, in different situations, like, oh, you know, I go to my parents' house, I don't feel good here, and I go over here, and I don't feel good here. Because the only thing that's going in all these places is you, you know, so that's why you don't feel good anywhere you go, because it's you, you're there. So if you don't pay attention to you and you don't fix what's going on here, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, it's not going to get no better, you know, and that's what I had to learn. And it took me a really, really long time, you know, to get that. So I'm glad that I was able to share with you guys, but that's all I got. My name is Desiree and I'm an addict and alcoholic.
Yeah, thank you, Desiree.
Thank you, Desiree. That was so,
I'm
so proud of you.
Thank you.
It was no, super awesome. I'm just stroking off instead. I thought it would.
Crystal, somebody wants to say hi to you.